We're back with Amy Bartlett. Are you there, Amy?
I am.
Well, welcome back to Filter. This is KPTZ 91.9. And our second hour is starring, I keep wanting to say Amy J. Bartlett because that's your Facebook name. And I want to jump off the J or something. I don't know. It feels like a leap. I don't know where my brain's going with that. But Amy, you are a longtime local person who has some extensive experience with both working in the school system at one point and also raising kids through many different iterations and versions of the school system. Would you say that's correct? Or would you give us a different background?
That's about right. I've been part of Ocean and Pi as a parent and public school in Chimicum as a parent, and I've worked at Chimicum for the last 5 years, and then recently I'm no longer working there. So, yeah, I was office lady at Chimicum, and that's probably the breadth of my knowledge is, you know, that role, that post there.
But would you say that people who aren't, you know, necessarily, people will turn to you with advice, not just about our local school system, but I've seen them turn to you to advice about college as well and other educational programs.
I've definitely navigated my kids through some pretty unique choices because I've always kind of let them guide the educational path that we're going to be on. So I have experience with a lot of different, I do end up answering a lot of questions about how to, you know, get into Running Start and stuff like that.
That's interesting. I want to talk about how you've let your kids guide the educational experience. I guess first I want to background you a little bit, just to get a little, so how long have you lived in Jefferson County?
For 20 years. Well, almost 20 years. About 19.
That's a long time. That's older than me. Just kidding. and have you had kids pretty much that entire time?
Charlotte was a toddler when we moved here. Marie was born here. I guess I can say their names out loud. We had, you know, preschool experiences here and early childhood, and we've done all of it, and now they're launching into their college careers. So yeah, we did the whole thing.
Well, let me ask you, is this your first pandemic?
This is my first pandemic.
Yeah, it's mine too. And that's kind of the zeitgeist of the world, I think, this last week was, well, okay, so the US caseload is, we're really going down the tubes. You know, the bad words. We got stuff that's happening that doesn't seem very hopeful for schools reopening. At least they're not going to actually reopen physically in California in the fall, right?
Well, parts, I think there's still parts on the fence.
Okay.
But I know LA County and San Diego County both said they would be online in the fall. I think Long Beach is still, I have a friend that works there in the schools, and I think, you know, they said online till October. You know, everybody's just sort of guessing right now.
We're all just waiting for some kind of like hammer to drop or maybe some good news, I guess. But I'm just not optimistic that there's good news on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, and I've talked a little bit with our local school, the people that I worked with, and what their plan is, and the plan is just constantly in flux based on, obviously, our numbers. The guidance from the state is basically we want face-to-face contact, you know, but like all government things, they have things they want, and then you have to figure out how, you know, it's like, okay, so do we, but trying to figure out how to implement that is hard. And so there's basically three options, you know, all online, hybrid, all in person. And most signs point to all in person would probably be hard to do.
Do you think, what I keep thinking about is like, who's more in danger from the reopening? Is it teachers, kids, or is it pretty like evenly spread around that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. So I mean, I'm not a scientist, but what I've read, just, you know, casually reading articles, is that kids are more impacted than we thought they were. If nothing else, they're asymptomatic carriers. I think I just read an article that said 30% of the kids tested in Florida were positive, even though they were asymptomatic. I don't know what the situation was where they tested that many kids, but, you know, they're carriers. And so then you have teachers who are obviously often in more, you know, in the age demographic that's going to be more impacted. And then they go home to grandparents, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just a bad idea. I mean, that's an opinion, obviously, but to be in a crowded space.
Yeah. Well, I want to get more into COVID and schools after a break. I guess I want to talk to you a little bit about something that I was reading about called the McCleary decision, which is connected to the Chimicum schools. I guess, can you give us a little background on that? And I mean, I guess you kind of lived through it in some ways.
The McCleary decision was a state lawsuit brought on by educators, spearheaded by Stephanie McCleary, who's the human resources person at Chimicum School District. And they won the case. I think it was in about 2013. It was determined that the state was not fully funding basic education. So that was the goal, was that, you know, basically education is not funded federally for the most part. It's funded by state and local taxes. And the problem with that is that places that have high property values, like Bellevue, easily make money for their schools. And places that don't have high property values have a harder time making enough money to pay for basic education. So education's uneven all throughout the state, depending on how affluent the area you live in. So the McCleary decision the McCleary lawsuit was designed to create something more equitable, but kind of what happened as a result of it was, my mom was actually in the legislature during that time, and I called her the other day for an update because the fix is always changing. It's like they decided to fund it, but the goal was to cap local levies. So schools can't raise as much money from property taxes. They get their money from the state, thinking that it would create a more equitable, you know, baseline. But really it's, our levies, we needed those. And so those have been capped. The schools haven't been able to make as much money that way. And my mom she's funny. She was like, I can't even keep track of it. It's changed so many times throughout from 2013 to now. But the long, short version is that schools are already hurting hard for money. That capping of the levies created almost even a bigger problem for rural public schools.
But there's going to be a lot more money coming to the schools now that we have all this COVID stuff, right? So we're going to get support from the state. Is that true, or is that not going to happen?
Not from the state, in my understanding. I mean, I'm not an expert, but I've done a lot of reading. The CARES Act had a piece of, you know, money designated for, and that's from the federal level, designated to target through the same channels that Title I money has gone in before. So basically, schools are mostly funded through state and local taxes. That's like 85% of the funding, if not more, is from state and local. The federal government and, you know, out there saying, we're going to hold your funds. Okay, that's like the extra 15% off the top. So, you know, I mean, and those are rough numbers. But essentially, the federal government funds very little. They fund specific programs like special ed and title. So the title money is basically targeting low-income people. And that money comes into our schools if it's a title school. And if it's a title school, then it also gets this CARES money, which is the COVID something relief act, this CARES money comes in through that same portal. Basically, if you're a title school, you're going to get some CARES money. And I don't know how much that is. I have no idea how much that is. But I do know that having worked within the school and seen the way that programs are designed, sometimes there's a big disconnect between money coming in and services going out based on the fact that there's barely enough staff to pull off the basic operation, let alone expand. So even though we had money, let's say, for our homeless kids that I worked with, it was sometimes hard. I didn't have the time in the day to make those connections and to build the relationship with OLECAP and, you know, do the things that need done so that you can get the money out to where it needs to be.
Is there a significant portion of students at Chimicum that were homeless that you've had experience with?
Yeah. I mean, homeless has a wide definition in schools. It can mean living with your grandparents. It can mean doubled up in somebody else's house. But yeah, there was a pretty big population, and I think there is nationally. And then all the way down to living in, you know, vans and trailers and campers and RVs.
So the schools, do the schools provide services to those students? And I guess what level of service are folks expecting from those schools beyond just being a place for people to learn?
Yeah, I mean, schools are definitely taking on more of a social service role, and a lot of that comes from legislation. You know, the McKinney-Vento legislation said homeless schools or homeless kids in school need to have these services provided. And it's spelled out, you know, you can read everything they're supposed to do. Some of it's pretty simple, like you have to enroll them even if they don't have an address, you know, and things like that. But some of it can be like really time consuming, like referrals to medical care, referrals to other resources in the community, all the way up to helping them get their stuff to graduate, you know, get their fees paid off. And so having somebody actually do that, that's a staff position. And those aren't always well funded.
I guess that's kind of what's been revelatory for me, is like realizing now that I have kids that aren't in school yet, but like just how, from the whole shutdown, realizing like, oh man, like kids rely on these lunches. Like they're not going to get fed otherwise. They're getting fed at school only sometimes in these situations.
Yeah. Right. We had kids who were free breakfast and lunch, and then on Fridays send home a backpack for the weekend. And Chimicum was great about doing that through the COVID shutdown. They mobilized right away. Monica, who's in charge of transportation, was like, we're doing the bus route and we're taking food. And she worked with our food services people, and they, within I think 5 days, had turned around a program where they were delivering food to the bus stops.
Oh, that's
so pretty
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, that's vital, especially, you know, that's really heartening to hear. So, I mean, things like that our schools are at least still able to do, even with all their funding being cut. It sounds like as long as you have folks who are really committed and willing to shoulder a bunch of these burdens, that the schools can continue to provide much needed services.
Yeah, it just takes some creativity. I mean, that's really what showed up right there at that moment was, oh, we've got buses, we've got staff, we've got food. You know, how can we turn this around so that we're still doing the thing, but we're not all coming to the same place?
Well, we're talking to Amy Bartlett, Amy J. Bartlett, about Jefferson County Schools. And after music break, we're going to talk about sort of COVID and the future, and maybe get a little insight from her as to what she's going through with your own daughter, so you don't have to name, but you know, we won't.
I already did.
Yeah, it's too late. You already did. You done did it.
Yep.
So I guess just thinking about your relationship, you know, to Jefferson County, do you see in the time that you watched your kids grow through, you know, sometimes in the school system, sometimes out, do you think that that things have gotten better for the schools or worse?
COVID. It's gotten so bad the last 5 years. And again, I have most of my experiences with Chimicum. I know Port Townsend has some of the similar struggles with funding and space and, you know, keeping up to date with technology and everything. Anyway, but it is, in the last 5 years, Chimicum had about 1,200 students when I started, and this last school year had 750 enrolled. So the enrollment declined hugely. And when that happens, the funding goes away. And when the funding goes away, there are more cuts made. And so the school was already at a place where we had mothballed a building and all crammed into another building. You know, offices were put into closets and conference rooms. So we didn't have any conference room we could use because it was somebody's office. And you know, we were using every inch of space. Every staff member was doing probably a little more than a whole job, maybe a job and a half. And when you have a situation like that and then COVID hits, you know, it's we can't just go back and say, oh, now we're going to spread the kids out because we already didn't have enough people or space.
Oh, my God. So, you know? But I guess we'll just have
to. Sorry, I didn't mean to be disappointing.
It's just a rough. It's just a rough day. It's a rough day for these realities that we have to face. And you know, I want to talk about, you know, ways we can be optimistic, but I think we also have to. We have to just kind of delve into the realities of the pandemic that are like, you know, that are not going to be pretty, and we don't know what they look like yet. And through this whole time, obviously, the worst part has been not knowing what things are going to look like. But now we're starting to get a clearer picture, it seems.
Kids are doing, I mean, that's the other thing. As you read about, you know, kids' mental health, which I think is a very real thing, but kids need their normalcy. And they, you know, and some of them would really like to return to school. But at the same time, I think it's worth noting that I live in a neighborhood where kids in the neighborhood are walking by all the time. I actually have one of the homeless kids I worked with is living right in our driveway. And I interact with these kids who, you know, are going through this, and I'm seeing them actually kind of come to life. And that's just the ones I'm seeing. You know, I'm not seeing the kids who are stuck at home, maybe in an unfortunate situation, or who are depressed. And so I don't deny that that's an impact on our kids out there. But the kids I see, you know, are getting jobs at QFC and, you know, starting to really take responsibility for themselves in cool ways. I don't know. So I think that it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. So can money solve COVID difficulties for the school systems? Can lots of money fix the whatever, you know, if we have to have distance learning, is that going to cost more to have like distance learning?
That's a complicated question because you're relying on families to have internet for one. So do we start paying for people's internet if they don't? Because a lot of families don't. You know, maybe they have their phone and their kid has a phone, but they don't have internet in their house. I can't tell you how many high school kids I've tried to tutor or work with who tried to write papers on their phone because, you know, they're trying to keep up with the high school assignment. And high schools are super into, oh, let's go to Google Classrooms. And, you know, the teachers get really excited about that. And it is exciting. But if your population can't keep up, you're just leaving kids in the dust because they don't have the technology. And they say, well, I'll go to the library. You know, like high school is already struggling to do their homework, let alone walk to the library.
That makes me want to cry almost. Like the thought of a student, I'm just thinking about papers, writing a paper on your phone. I mean, you're not going to, like, I've written some things on the phone, like they're texts and there's, I mean, but that's,
It's hard.
That's unfair.
When I left Chimicum in March, and I was already leaving, I was already on my way out. It just happened to time with the whole school building left at the same time. The goal, I think, was because we did get an operations levy that gave computers to every classroom, there should have been enough computers for every kid. I think the goal was to get the computers out to the students so that they could do their online learning. But again, you know, what about their internet at home? So, you know, money can help, but then you have to get really creative about the solutions for doing that. And online learning is that's a different bird. I mean, there's a lot of special ed that has a hard time happening that way. And there are a lot of kids who can't really pay attention that long sitting on a computer.
It's hard.
My own kids go through it, and it's something for sure.
I mean, I can speak for having a lot of Zoom meetings now, and I'm sorry, but I got other tabs open. I got other stuff I'm doing. I'm, you know, and my camera can't tell what I'm looking at or if I'm paying attention or listening. There's only three listeners, I'm sure, right now. I don't know how many listeners there are. So making sure I'm not, you know, hopefully all the people that I'm actually Zooming with, they'll realize that I'm listening when they're talking. But why can't all classes be outdoors, for instance?
Well, they're talking about that. I know that that's in the talks of, you know, I mean, well, there's the weather for one thing. You know, realistically, how do you move 750 people outside?
I guess you just put them in a field.
It looks like hay bale, just every 6 feet apart. I don't know how you do that. I mean, there are some spaces that can work in Chimicum specifically. But I don't know that you could accommodate the whole school that way. If you did staggered days, maybe that would work. You know, you have kids come in. I know that in Port Townsend, they were talking about Blue Heron and the high school doing, I don't know, 2 days and 2 days or something like that, you know. So, you know, that's a possibility.
Wow. So we don't know what Chimicum's doing yet. We don't really know what Port Townsend's doing yet.
What we know is that the state has said the goal is face-to-face. And they defer to the CDC, basically face-to-face, if you can meet the CDC guidelines. And then the schools are up, it's up to them to come to work with a creative solution. All of them have to submit a plan to the state within 2 weeks of opening day. And that plan has to be approved by the state. And so right now, I think it's still very much in educators. Teachers are, you know, the teachers union's trying to advocate. The administration is trying to be creative. And all together, they're going to come up with something. Okay. And it'll probably change after that.
And maybe I should get a member of the teachers union on here, you know, because I would be really interested to see.
That's a great idea. That
concern that, you know, I mean, teachers are like the most underpaid people in the country. Access to healthcare is, you know, if it's, I guess if it's a, but even if you have like state or healthcare.
Well, I want to say that recently, you know, the McCleary decision did actually raise teachers' salaries. And that's not to say that that wasn't a great thing. I mean, it did create more of a living wage for teachers, and the new state and employee benefits package, the healthcare package, is really comprehensive. So, you know, I wouldn't say we've overdone it, but teachers are more compensated than they had been previously. So there's that.
Well, that's heartening
that
to hear.
But that said, the other staff, the EA staff, the assistants, the paraeducators, they call them, all the people who, when the kid blows out in class and goes, you know, running out the door and somebody's got to go hang out with that kid for a minute and try to help them gather themselves, those people, the staff members, that's what's been cut so heavily, and we're in dire need of support for that kind of stuff. So when I imagine it from an office lady perspective and going back to school, first of all, getting kids to keep their masks on, and then the teacher's got a mask on and they're trying to yell through the mask. It's like, wow.
Yeah. No, I just don't see.
And then when you have those behavior problems, who's going to go talk with that kid? And, you know, that's the resources we just really don't have.
All these unknowns, but you have some, at least you have a few more knowns now. So your two daughters, can you talk to us a little bit about their experiences? You know, because I think one is in her second year of college. Is that right?
One's going into her third.
Or third year of college. Okay.
They've done weird. They've both done Running Start. So they both had a couple of years under their belt before they graduated high school.
Gotcha.
So that makes it confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they got out quick.
Yeah. Well, both of them were just, and that's part of the reason I'm part of the problem. I pulled my kids out of Chimicum to do other things because there wasn't an opportunity for them to go to that next level there. But Running Start really does provide the next level opportunity. So,
and that's kind of what you were talking about before, about how you let your kids kind of guide their education, which I thought was really a neat idea.
And it
seems to have worked in practice.
Well, who knows? But we think one did the Pi program and then went to Running Start and has finished her 2 years and is now on her way to Rome to study the classics.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah, hardcore stuff. And we're jumping through the student visa hoops for that. So that's supposed to still happen. We weren't sure there for a little bit.
Even though we're like banned from all other countries?
Even though we're banned from Italy, apparently you can get a student visa. Her school will have in-person classes, but her major is like, you know, 15 people. So it's not, and they'll have to wear masks because it's Italy and people won't ask questions. They just have to wear masks.
Right. Unlike here where it's a political statement.
Right, exactly. It's not even an option. So that's the other thing about going back to regular public school here is I wonder how many people have a political opinion about their kid wearing a mask, and then we have that issue. So, you know, there's another piece. But the other daughter did regular school up until Running Start and then graduated high school early and is headed to San Diego State University, which is exciting, and they are going to do all online classes. But she's going to live in the dorm, I guess,
and
isolate. And they're going to reduce occupancy, so the dorm will only be two people.
Whoa.
Yeah, they gave them, like, upgraded housing. She's got an apartment, basically.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's like, yeah. In some ways, maybe missing out. But, you know, that seems interesting with California going back to phase one, basically. And so, but that hasn't changed anything. And have they told you if it's possible it could change in the...
Well, they had said online classes. They started saying online classes in June. So, you know, we are expecting to go online classes all year. The only benefit from actually sending her to San Diego is so that she can feed herself and, you know, sit in her Zoom meeting with her dorm mate in her Zoom meeting and be in college. It's just a mindset thing, really, I guess, because there aren't really going to be any in-person events for them at all. They can socialize outside with the people in their dorm, and the dorm is kind of like an old, you know, Route 66 hotel. It's actually, it looks like it's a, you know, U-shaped building. It looks just like an old hotel. And so they can sit out in the courtyard and they can socialize with other people from the dorm outside with masks.
Well, see, this is heartening because I was kind of like, you know, and I knew colleges especially were in a tough spot because, like, what do we do if we do we give our money back? Like,
and it's actually, you asked the question, I think it's valid. I think it costs just as much to produce online curriculum that's engaging as it does to do. I mean, the only difference between online school and in-person school is facilities. And that's made up for by your need for technology.
And it's almost, you know, one of my thinkings was like, going back to our local schools in Jefferson County, like you cannot do online only if you don't A, give everybody, make sure everybody has internet access in their home, and then B, mm-hmm. give them a laptop that can actually, or any kind of functioning computer that can actually do streaming video. Like, and not on their phones, but mm-hmm. like a separate device. And mm-hmm. my, you know, sometimes I'm, you know, Manichaean with it and very black and white. And I'm like, if you can't do that, then you can't do online only education. Like, you just, then you have completely made it so much more inequitable.
Part of what, and, you know, bureaucratic red tape is thick, but part of what the CARES Act says is that if schools do go to kind of a hybrid model, they should prioritize low-income people, special ed people, people that have a specific difficulty accessing online curriculum would be prioritized to come in person. And so maybe you just reduce your numbers. But then is there going to be a big uproar about, well, these kids get to go and those kids have to stay home? And, you know, so I don't know. That feels weirdly hot button issue as well. But yeah, that's like, what they've suggested.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't in this.
Yeah.
God, it's like in anything in life, almost. And yeah, you brought up the masks earlier too. I'm like, that is, I mean, we saw, I don't know if you saw, there was this like Utah meeting about the school reopening and all these people came without masks and basically like mm-hmm. the county commissioners were like, we can't have this meeting. Like, this is
totally. And I don't know if you've noticed, but if wearing a mask out in public, I'm trying to order, you know, something, you know, I would like this or whatever. And you got to yell to get through that thing. And the other person's like, what? I didn't quite, you know, and I'm thinking if a teacher of a third grade class. Like, good luck.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's making us quieter for sure. You know, I'm starting to really love my mask, but, or one of my masks, but like it's Stockholm syndrome too. You know, nobody likes the mask. Nobody really loves the mask.
Kids are especially fidgety and kids, you know, that are irritated by it are going to take it off. And then just in the last 2 or 3 years, the amount of times we've had to say, put your cell phone away, you know, 300 times. I imagine it would be a similar issue with the mask. Put your mask on. Put your mask on.
Yeah. No, and it's that just extra, it's those bits of extra labor that are going to drive teachers crazy and, I mean, who knows, drive them to quit if there's too much of it. And all the, you know, it's just like with small business owners being forced to tell tourists to put their masks on when they come in their business. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, it's the law.
It puts like, the burden on the deliverer.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And it actually gets dangerous. Like I read something today about a guy who was not wearing his mask in a grocery store and another gentleman asked him to put the mask on and he stabbed him.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like that's the kind of thing that I'm just terrified that that's just going to keep happening, you know, hopefully not in our schools, but there people have taken the mask thing to this level that it's unprecedented to me. I mean, maybe it shouldn't be because Trump is our president, but like, so.
Yeah. And I wish schools had been better situated to, you know, be culturally cohesive and all kind of on the same board about, you know, what we need to do to be part of school. I think that if we had a better starting point, we might be able to rise to the occasion and be like, oh, okay, we all need to wear a mask and we all need to sit 6 feet apart. But because we were already so fractured, you know, and without resources and just, you know, even like I said, the conference room thing sounds like an extra, but a conference room is where we would keep a kid who was being defiant. We'd say, oh, go sit in there for a little bit and calm down. There's no space for that.
Man.
So you basically just have that, you know, right out in the middle of everybody. And there's no place to go sit and, you know, maybe talk with somebody and, you know, get your composure and put your mask back on and get back into class.
Right.
Those resources just aren't really readily available.
Well, I'm sure there'll be some more unknowns becoming known in the coming weeks, but I just want to thank you for just kind of spitballing with us today about about schools and what the future is. And we've been talking to Amy Bartlett, who, although is not an official expert, has definitely been involved, especially in the Chimicum School District, with two daughters who are now on their way to really awesome new experiences. So congratulations on that. And I'm really glad to hear that COVID isn't holding them back as much as it could have.
Yeah, and like I said, all the kids in the neighborhood, there is a plus for these kids too. Seeing kids spend more time with their families has actually been really heartening. I think there's something to be looked at on the full side as well, that kids are getting some time with their families at home to connect and learn things they're interested in, and that is in itself valuable even throughout all of the darkness.
Well, thank you for being with us, Amy, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon with even better news in a couple months.
Sounds good. Thank you, Paul.
Okay, take care.